That means go. All right. Just like an aircraft. I'm ready to jump. Okay. I'm sorry about that. I thought I had it on. Okay, so I looked at this from a leadership standpoint and looked at Joshua and what he was able to accomplish and looked at some of the similarities between Joshua and Jesus. So one question I'll start out with, what makes a good leader? What's one of the most characteristic traits? Education? Communication. Exactly. Lead from the front. Exactly.
Think about with Joshua, especially courage, you know, how that chapter 1 starts off, and maybe I wonder if he was a little bit timid, maybe, you know, following in the steps of Moses, being such a great leader as he was, but he certainly was up to the task.
That's a great, great comment, because I mean, I think we underestimate the situation in which Joshua found himself in. Being a pretty young man, and the best leader that Israel had had up to this time, Moses, had just died. And Joshua was selected by God to take Moses' place. So I'm sure he felt like we would feel I know when I did military training, I would take out the leader and let the next guy up take charge. Now, what did that do? That prepared the other person to be able to assume that responsibility in the event that it really did happen. So when this Joshua didn't really have a chance, but he did have the opportunity to observe and work under Moses as he was Moses was leading the children out of Egypt. So he was with Moses, and even at key times he witnessed Moses at several key times during the Mount Sinai when Moses was given the law, and he saw how Moses interacted with God. So it's one thing was mentioned was experience, which he was able to get. One thing also I see about Joshua was he was a good follower. And I always say you can't be a good leader unless you're a good follower. Just like Jesus was a good follower, he followed what God said, he did what God said. He was a servant leader. In other words, Joshua did not come here to be served. He came to serve the people. He mostly came to serve God first and did what God said, and he served his people. So it took a lot of courage, as Jacob just mentioned, and God realized that in this situation, courage is always important. And if you're faced with life and death situations, and I think Joshua understood what God was asking him to do. But he also knew that he could not do it without whose help? God's help. Because some of the things that God asked Moses and the people to do in our day and times wouldn't pass the common sense test, would it not? I mean, if he told us to do some of the things they did, you go up here and hold up this rod, you keep holding it up, and I'm going to give you a victory. I mean, how many people would go do that? So sometimes what makes sense to us or doesn't make sense to us makes sense to God. So you can't doubt when God tells you to do things, and that's what Joshua learned as he was working with Moses. And I think Moses did a pretty good job of preparing Joshua for his responsibility. So this book basically contains a 50-year span of the conquest and division of Canaan. So a great deal of this book has to deal with campaigns in which God really does the fighting for his people. Even though Joshua was a great military-minded man, that's obvious. I read some of the things he did. He moved by night. That's something we always do. We mostly fight at night during hours of limited visibility. He set up ambushes, attacked the rear lines, which is something we also do still to this day. So he applied a lot of the military tactics that we do today in the army or the military. So some of the key verses and key words, as we mentioned some, is courage, conquest, and possess. There's a lot of key verses in this book. I just put a few, and you may come up with more, as we can talk about Joshua 1:5, which Jacob just talked about. And let's read that real quick. Joshua 1:5. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong, of good courage. For to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left. In other words, don't waver, that you may prosper wherever you go. Okay, so we can keep reading through verse 9, but the bottom line is God assured Joshua, do not worry, do not be concerned, be brave, take courage. I'm going to help you. What lesson can we take from this for us today? I think sometimes we underestimate God's actual power. I think sometimes we don't believe, when I say we, I mean I speak for myself, that sometimes we underestimate what God can really do for us. We limit God when God has no limits. If Joshua had heard this and said, well, you know, I got you, Lord, but you know, I'm still scared. I'm not going to go out and do it. I can tell you some of the things that you do in life. Some of the things I did in life, I did it not, you know, you worry about death. We all do, right? But if I went out every day thinking I'm not going to get through this day, or I'm not going to make it, or my people's not going to make it, you probably wouldn't go out if you thought about it a lot, right? So we had to demonstrate the same courage that God was asking Joshua here to demonstrate. Do not fear what man can do to you. Because man can take your soul, man can take your life or your body, but God can take your soul. So God has the power to deliver his people, as he did here. So the author, I believe, is Joshua. I think the book is named after Joshua. However, I don't think he could have wrote chapter 24 in some cases, but I do believe Joshua is the author of this book. Does anybody else have any other thoughts on who the author is? What's Joshua's name mean? God is salvation. And Joshua, his name is somewhat similar to who else's name? Jesus. So Joshua, God is salvation. So his name is symbolic to the fact that although he is the leader of the Israelite nation during the conquest, the Lord is the conqueror. God is salvation. God is doing it for him. So I think the theme deals with the faithfulness of God, that God will always keep his promises, even when people don't see it. Sometimes we fail to see those things. And I can imagine, you know, after wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, you know, being enslaved all those years, that even God's people still had those doubts. You know, I couldn't imagine being Moses or Joshua trying to lead this many people. They're complaining, whining. I know I just had a few, you know, maybe 500 and 600 people, but he had thousands. And I had some, my 600 people were sometimes complaining. You know, why are we doing this? This is stupid, you know. Why are we doing it this way? It's an easy way to do it. So you can imagine the difficulties of leading such a large group of people. And I can't say I'd want to be Joshua in this situation. All right, so the first thought question, let's get to this, because there's a lot of things we can discuss as we go through these questions. What key characteristic traits did Joshua have, and why did these traits make him such a great leader? Now, we'll kind of do some mind mapping here and just start mentioning a bunch of different traits, and we'll talk about a few of those traits. Or you can mention the trait and talk about it when you mention it. Duke? Trust and commitment to the Lord. Good. Anyone else? Courage. Good one. There's probably not a right or wrong answer. Just think about good leadership traits. Right.
To me, that's a trait of a great leader, is you're not just thinking about, okay, I'm about to finish this job up and now I'm going to get out of here and take care of myself. But you're trying to prepare those that are under you.
Oh, definitely. So you just mentioned one of the key things I think of what a leader does, influence. A leader influences people. And I tell people, I wrote a paper, I studied Robert Greenlee's leadership theories. And one of the leadership theories he discussed was servant leader. This was taken after Jesus himself as a servant leader. And like you said, a servant leader is a selfless person. He doesn't put himself first, he puts others first. He also prepares people to assume responsibilities in his absence. So when you ask yourself, who is the greatest leader the world has ever known? If you ask people that, put that on Facebook, you get many different answers, right? And most of the time, you probably get Jesus himself, I think. There's no greater leader because after being dead all these thousands of years, he's still influencing people today. And that's a sign of a great leader. Just like Joshua, as Jacob just mentioned in the last chapter, 24, gave that speech to prepare his people to remain steadfast and continuing to serve even after he's gone. So a lot of times what happens when you take the leader out? Or the leader dies. Adam? Well, sometimes you hope that. But
you hope so.
That was the problem in the World War II. Go ahead. That's the problem in World War II with the Russian army and also the German army. When you took out the leadership, the people didn't know what to do. They had not prepared. Like the American Army, as long as you have a private left, he understands the intent, he's going to carry out the orders. You know what I'm saying? In other armies I've read about in history, and I actually fought against some of them that were trained by those countries like Russia, when you take away the head, they scatter. They have no continuity. And that's kind of what Joshua is kind of worried about. He's worried about, when I leave, what happens to my people? I need someone. Someone has to step up. And that's what Adam's just talking about, next man up. So you hope you have a person that steps up and knows what they're doing and they're prepared for it. So I think that influence is very important. What else? Yeah, people still follow him.
Right. So there's forms of leadership, and in Joshua's case, he chose to be the leader God wanted him to be,
mm-hmm.
in a positive way. So we don't always see that with some.
Right. So some more humble. Jacob.
I think about Kevin's comment. I mean, he led not just by his words or his actions, but I mean his whole example.
Right. Okay, that's correct. What about humility? I think one of the biggest attributes missing from leaders today is humility. Humility, honesty. So he was a humble leader, an honest leader, and he was focused. He was focused on the task. I think Duke mentioned that earlier. He was dedicated. He was passionate. He was disciplined. You know, he couldn't do what he did without being a disciplined leader. He was confident. He was decisive. When he made a decision, there was no going back on his decisions that he made, because he was doing things God's way. You know, like we said before, sometimes things necessarily didn't make sense on how, like taking down Jericho. I mean, you know, would that make sense to us today, how to defeat a city? I mean, no. But that's fully trusting in what God told him that God would do. Like I said, I'm going to give it to you, but do it the way I tell you to. But to most people, it wouldn't have made any sense. So, I mean, when I read some of this stuff, I mean, I kind of laugh sometimes because, you know, how many people would have done that God's way? That's Exactly. You can't be a good leader if you're not a good follower. That's point blank. That's the first thing I think you have to be, is a good follower. He was a great communicator. Someone mentioned that earlier. And he's also self-aware. He understood human nature. He understood the nature of the people. I think also he was a caring leader. Well, I think it's another key attribute to a leader. You have to care. Jesus cared. If he didn't care about us, he wouldn't have went to the cross and done his Father's will. Joshua was a caring leader, even after he found Achan, who sinned and caused him to lose the battle against Ai. What did he do? He called him my son and questioned him on it and told him to come clean. Of course, Achan still played for the sin, but Joshua showed care and concern to Achan. And even after he lost men because of Achan. And I can tell you, as a leader, when you lose men or women, when someone makes a mistake, you kind of get upset about that. So how did Joshua influence Israel for such a long time? And why is influence important today? Like Kevin just said, we can influence people for the bad or the good. You can be a good leader and influence people for good things or bad things. Hitler was a good leader for what his purpose was. Oh, no doubt. That's why we quote Joshua 24 quite often, right? You see it on the little signs they build at these craft shops, you know? So I think we have one, don't we? So it definitely does. Well, I think we talked about, I think the most important facet of a leader is influence. And there can be no leadership without influence. The greatest leader in the history we already mentioned was Jesus, who still influences us today. Influence is critical, but Joshua was able to influence the people because he did what God told him to do. He won the trust and the confidence of the people. You know, they realized that God was with Joshua that God would give Israel the victories if they did what Joshua said. And I think, you know, God helped Joshua out quite a bit by setting certain conditions for him, showing the people that I'm going to be with Joshua and the people. I'm going to give you these victories. So, and God did that in front of the people. Why? Yeah, when Moses was about ready to die, I think God told Moses, he said, bring Joshua in front of all the people and kind of inaugurate him and let everybody know that Joshua is going to be my replacement. He's going to take my responsibility and be the leader of Israel. And that helped him out quite a bit. But I also think, you know, from Joshua's standpoint, he was Moses' number one commander, right? He was like a General Petraeus or General McChrystal or any other four-star, General MacArthur, five-star, George Washington, I mean, all kinds of. So he was a senior commander for Moses. He fought the Amalekites, did what Moses told him to do. Pretty young man, right? He wasn't an old guy. I think may have been 39 years old at that time, maybe. I don't know. I have to go back and look. I was trying to do some math on how old he was when all these events happened, but it was kind of hard to pull that together. But he was a pretty young guy. He wasn't a very old guy, you know. And he might have been a little bit older then, but I can't have to remember exactly. That's what I was getting ready to say. I think he was 79. I'm sorry. So I was adding the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. I think he was 79. Right. Right. That's a good example for us today.
We can overcome fear. You can be fearful, but you can overcome fear. That sounds like.
You know, yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I think.
If a man is not able to conquer, he's going to hide, like the one talent man, he's going to hide in the dirt. Then the Lord's not going to be pleased with that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think Joshua demonstrated these traits at a very young age. You know, it wasn't like one day he woke up and he just became this great leader. He demonstrated these traits as he was growing in age and stature. Also, you know, he was also a good military leader. He understood tactics, techniques, and procedures. And I think he also learned a lot of stuff from his enemies when he was out fighting his enemy. He fought some great enemy commanders. And Joshua took some of their techniques, tactics, and procedures and used them. You know, he learned from mistakes, as we all do in battle. And he turned the tables on some with God's help. Now, well, I want to understand that Joshua, just because God always helped Joshua, he still was a great military commander. He still used some great tactics, techniques, and procedures. And some of this was stuff that he had learned. So, question number one, if you have your questions, Joshua was introduced to the Bible student in this passage as a competent military leader. What king did Joshua defeat when Israel was coming out of Egypt, and describe what happened in God's judgment against this nation? And what lessons might have impressed Joshua in realizing just how he was able to win this particular battle? And we read about this in Exodus chapter 17, verse 18 through 14, Deuteronomy 25, 17 through 19. Who would like to answer that? I know it's a pretty long question, probably a three-part question. Anybody want to discuss that? Right. That's exactly right. So he learned it by faith, by obedience. He could what?
You know, this amazes me too. Amalek decided to
Right.
When did they get the weapons? What they had, sticks, stones?
Right.
God supplied the victory over overwhelming odds.
Exactly. Superior military, superior led military.
Now they may have picked up a few weapons from the different ground of the sea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be kind of like guys we fight today. I mean, they don't have helicopters and fast-moving aircraft and predators and all the stuff that we have, but they're pretty effective. Jacob?
Like Duke's saying, from a human perspective, it looked like there was no way they could win.
No. I think that's exactly right. Without God, there is no victory. And he realized that very early on. Now, what could have been the next question is, what other attitude could Joshua have developed after this victory? What happens to some leaders? We see it all the time. We all have to be careful because it can happen to anyone. What happens when you get good things happen, you accomplish a big event, and you feel good about yourself? It's easy to do, is it not? I mean, we have to be careful today. We can feel better about ourselves and think we're better than really what we are. In other words, we don't stay humble. We think, look what I did, look what I accomplished. This, I did this. So you can let it go to your head and then forget how you actually accomplished what you just did. We see it all the time, you know. Sometimes when we see it all with leaders today, right? No matter where they're at, United States or all over the world, when they have too much pride and arrogance, and you know what the Bible says about pride, Holy Spirit, right? What comes after all that? Destruction. So we have to be careful as leaders and as people, and we're all leaders to a certain extent, and we're all followers. You're always leading, you're always following. Can't do one without the other. Kevin?
It kind of goes back to the comment we were talking before about fear. You know, if you don't have fear in any type of situation of when you're a leader or being, then you got a problem. I mean, when it's just talking about maybe leading your family or if you're leading the church as an elder or even an elder, if you don't have some little bit of fear in there, then you got another problem. You should always have a little.
Right.
Because if not, then your humility is at a level that probably isn't good. And I think that's what we see with looking back historically, and even Bible characters or historical characters in our history. Some leaders, they didn't have fear. They didn't fear God. They didn't fear.
Didn't fear nobody.
They were just, I'll do what I want. And sometimes that's an outer way to do it. You know, an outer action. You act like you're not scared. You really are. But and that happens. But at the same time, there seems to not be a fear of God today in a lot of ways because God doesn't exactly act the way he did before. Before, you touch that ark, you're dead. Nowadays, you know, we sin, we still have a chance to live and carry on. So I think fear is important to have at whatever you're leading. So.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, that's why fear God and keep his commandments, right? You see it all throughout the scripture. Okay, we talked about number two already, and we talked about number three. Number three, Moses, Duke talked about it, sent the 12 spies into Canaan to develop a strategy for conquering it. And Instead of the, some 10 of the spies came back and gave a real poor report, said we can't do it, they're too big, they're too strong, we can't do it, we're too weak, we don't have enough arms, people, we just can't do it. Like Duke said, Caleb and Joshua, two young guys, said, yes, we can do it because God is with us. And, you know, like he said, these guys faced some consequences to that. But the Lord, they told them, if God is with us, who can really be against us? Who shall we fear? I mean, why are we afraid for? You know, it's kind of interesting, too, when you look at all the victories they've already received and they saw all these miracles from the Red Sea parting and swallowing up the entire Egyptian army. And of course, they weren't in the wilderness of four generations that died. But when you wonder why you question God sometimes on this stuff. I mean, if I'd saw this stuff, I definitely would have, I think I would have had no fear, you know. I mean, I think I would. It's easier said than done. You have to face the situation. But it makes you wonder. So many New Testament passages work along the same theme, soothing the fear of saints who think all may be lost. Consider the following passages and summarize how each of them is encouragement to us not to fear our adversaries and circumstances. Let's go to Romans 8, verses 31 through 39. We probably don't have time to read these. I'm running out of time pretty quickly. But what does Romans 8, 31, 39 kind of tell us about? God's love and care will always be available to His people. That's correct. And what else? If God is for us, who can be against us? And I think, you know, the bottom line is, this scripture is one I go to quite often. It gives me good comfort. Because who can separate us from the love of Christ? Love of God. Who can separate us? Nothing. Not even death itself. So that's kind of why you're able to go through certain things in life and realize the promises that God has made. It takes faith, but we also see that we have the Bible and we read about stuff here in Joshua and we see how God took care of His people, so He will take care of us. Jesus prepared a place for us, and where He is, we may be also. How about 2 Corinthians 12, verses 7 through 10? What Paul tells us there. We sometimes may have thorns in our flesh, but what?
Christ has the strength and the power to more than help us overcome anything Satan can throw at us.
Exactly. His grace is sufficient for us. He's going to take care of us. His love, His mercy. How about 2 Timothy 1, 3 through 7? Here, it says, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a strong mind. So should we walk around as Christians being afraid? You know, I feel bad because I wouldn't speak to Muslims in their country. Number one, it's a general order violation. We couldn't do it. Okay, but I do it over here, but I couldn't do it over there. But sometimes we do fear and we don't do things we know we should do, right? You know, why? We're afraid of rejection. We think we're not good enough to go speak to people sometimes, right? But should we be like that? Should we be afraid? Should we take courage knowing that God is with us and He'll provide us a way? Like Duke talked about the talent a minute ago, sometimes we don't use our talents. We're afraid to use our talents. We're afraid we won't accomplish. We're afraid we'll be unsuccessful. How about Hebrews 13, 5 through 6? Exactly. Be content. God will always be with us. I'm going to skip around a little bit here. Number 8, should the Christian's relationship to the New Testament bear any similarity to Joshua with the Old Testament? Matthew 7, 21 through 23, and 1 Peter 4 and 11. If so, how? Exactly. And what happens in Matthew 7, verse 21 through 23, if we don't do the will of God, what's Jesus going to tell us? He never knew us. Depart from me. Yes. And that's something that we should fear, right? I think. Jacob.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you think about Joshua and all great leaders. I mean, they live very, very busy lives, just hardly have any time to themselves. Here he is leading, you know, a nation that could have been several million people at this time. And God is telling them the importance of taking the time to reflect on his work.
Exactly.
How important that is for us.
That's where we get our courage from, right? Well, we're not going to get it from ourselves. We can get some, but not that kind of peace, not that kind of courage, not that kind of understanding. And so the bottom line is, if we do not do God's will, we won't have the hope that he's promised. We won't have a chance. Because unless we do his will, well, there is no sacrifice, or no grace, no mercy. Okay, so number 11, Joshua gives 3 points of advice just before his own demise. This is where Joshua kind of, Joshua wasn't a perfect man, let's just be honest. Nobody is. But I tell you what, he's a pretty good man, good leader. He said, number one, fear the Lord. Number two, serve him in sincerity and truth. Number three, put God first and serve the Lord. Okay? All right, so I'm out of time, I guess, huh? All right, so takeaways real quickly. Let's note where Joshua was successful and where we as Christians can be successful by following Joshua 24, verse 15. Serve the Lord and keep his commandments. Thank you very much. Appreciate your participation.